The Right to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Body Bio. Get 20% off any Body Bio order at bodybio.com with code Mike's Tummy. Mortgage CS, become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP at mortgagecs.com/Ricky. And Surfside, iced tea and vodka from Stateside, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe. Subscribe at rightsrickysanchez.com/newsletter. On the show today, a late entry before the year actually begins. Daryl Morey stops by.
I should have thought about, I was about to really quickly draw up a Daryl Morey is a liar on a piece of paper and hold it up to him, but he wouldn't appreciate it. He would have liked it, but I wouldn't have put him in a position.
I feel like that one's a little close to home. Yeah.
It's very close to home. We'll see if we talk to him about it.
Yeah. Are you a liar? So we usually record these after we've talked to him, but we haven't talked to him yet. So, you know, this is the first time he's ever done it right before the playoffs. Like, this pod could sound terrible in 2 days. So thank you, Daryl. Hopefully the pod sounds good. It's the year. We're confident. Whatever. Surfside iced tea and vodka. Ooh, boy, it's good. Ooh, boy. It's beautiful out today. And I did my first WIP show. We were talking about going to the ballpark. We couldn't tonight. And I just think about the ballpark and Surfside iced tea and vodka. And Ike is a Surfside guy now. Ike is a official Surfside endorser. Ike Reese.
Love it. So, an endorser.
Yes, he's an endorser, like us.
Do you think he's, like, is he like?
Yeah, he's into it.
An influencer type? Like, what do I am for Body Bio? Is
that Body Bio hasn't grabbed him yet. So, okay. Yeah, so it's only 100 calories, 3 grams of sugar, tastes fucking great, lightly sweet, no carbonation because iced tea doesn't have bubbles. Go to statesidevodka.com to order it. You got to be 21. And a bonus, the year t-shirt, which was supposed to end yesterday, to talk to the guys over at Shive Vintage Sports. We decided to extend it one more day because of the Daryl pod. So the year t-shirt, which is beautiful, and you can get Shive Vintage Sports, will only go, I think, until 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning, because any later than that is pretty dangerous. So look at the link in the description of this pod and you can order it right there, or go to Shive Vintage Sports and what's it called? And search Ricky Sanchez. And then finally, if you're watching on YouTube as a premiere for the first time ever, or watching on YouTube for the second time ever and you're not subscribed, subscribe, turn on notifications. That way you get the notification when we're live after playoff games. And we will be live after every playoff game starting Wednesday night. Well, it's not a playoff game, playing game. Without any further ado, Amos, the chef, and Daryl.
Let's do a full professional introduction for the people who don't know Daryl. A lot of people don't know Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl Morey. They know us. Podcast.
First time.
They know us. They don't know Daryl. Daryl, president of basketball operations with the Philadelphia 76ers. That is your official title, yes?
Pobo.
I believe so.
Yeah. I see you have strategically placed a painting of Joel Embiid behind you.
And I have my Allen Iverson shirt.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow, look at you pandering. Bryce Harper level pandering.
Bryce Morey statue. At the giant statue unveiling. So
are you nervous? So we're recording this. I don't know when people are listening to it, if they're watching it live, but we're recording this the night before the play-in. Do you get nervous?
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess they teach you an interview skill not to ask yes or no questions.
That's a good thing. Why are you nervous?
I mean, it's so important. I mean, turning my phone off so we don't get interrupted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, look, you do all this work for these moments. So, you know, you guys get to have a few more podcasts and we may not have that many more games this year. So, yeah, it's the finality of it. And it's really a bummer. We win 8 in a row and we don't avoid the play-in. I was a big fan of the play-in. I talked to the guy who invented the play-in at the league office and told him he should definitely be fired as LeBron said, I believe. But look, I think it's good for the league, but I hate that we're in it this year.
Do you feel like the tiebreakers are unpleasant?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things like close games are coin flips. So just don't be in close games. I mean, we obviously we had some good reasons we didn't play as well as we hoped this year. But once you're in all these tiebreak, they have to break them sometimes. Well, they could use coin flips. They could use, I mean, I agree. I was in the meeting where they talked about keeping the divisions. I believe the league wanted the divisions gone. This is my memory. And several teams argued for it heavily because they wanted, because the unbalanced schedule, to be able to say that those games meant more and their rivalry games. So I understood how we got here. Obviously, when we wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't hurt us this year, right? I mean, it wouldn't even be a pod topic. So
did you happen to bring wine to this podcast? And what would you say your basketball IQ is on a scale of 1 to 200?
I don't want to judge my own basketball IQ because Dunning-Kruger will kick in. You have to hit a sweet spot on that. And what was the first question? Did I bring wine? No.
Oh,
I'm a boxed wine guy. That's how like high end I am, basically. So
what? No, we know. Obviously, we all believe that the team would have been well out of the play-in, debatably in the 2 seed if Embiid plays his normal, you know, 60 or 65 games or whatever. Overall, like, how do you feel like about the team's performance this year? You know,
I think comfortably in the 2 seed. I mean, we're on pace. Guy would say we're on pace for 56 or something. And we were actually on pace for more than that with our point differential and even adjusting for schedule strength and things like that. Look, I just to judge myself, I really hoped we would play better in those times when Joel was out. We're really not built for that, but you do hope you have a few more players step up. I do think Maxey hit the high end of what we hoped this year. Like, I really think, you know, it's really exciting big picture wise for the franchise that we have, I think, the best player and the second best player on a team that can win the championship. There's not a lot of teams that can say that. But you know, it's more on me. Like, once you're past that, I really thought we'd win more than, you know, a little over a third of our games. And we just needed a few more guys to step up and, you know, guys I could have brought in, you know, whatever it might be. So
Do you think the time without Embiid, because it seemed to us, we were talking on the podcast, that even in the last month that Maxey has hit like sort of a different plateau. Do you think the time without Embiid like has positive for him at all?
I think it was very positive for Maxey. Yes. I think for the other players, it was a little less than you might think because the team's really built around Joel, mostly Joel, obviously Tyrese's, but you know, we bring in, we don't bring a lot of players in who, you know, take a lot of shots and do a lot of, like, they're complimentary guys. And so you lose Joel, you also lose, you know, guys who are used to playing with Joel. So I think it helped in that guys got a lot of reps. I think you know, guys like Kelly Oubre, really, it was really helpful for him to, you know, really play winning basketball at a high level for a winning team, which he hasn't had a lot of chances to do that in his career. I think Buddy Hield, it was very good too. Obviously he was up and down. And I think I was really excited how he's playing into the playoffs. We're going to, you know, Miami often plays zone. Miami's like really random with their zone. They'll play zone one game a lot, win the game, and then play it almost not at all the next game. I really admire how they mix things up like that. But you know, if they play zone, I'm hopeful Buddy can step in there and help quite a bit. We've had so many, you know, Paul Reed's really on. A lot of guys are on upswing. So look, everything's sort of lined up to be great, but now you got to go do it. That's why I'm nervous for tomorrow. Yeah.
You mentioned it. I have kind of all season long felt that this was the best Joel team that there has been in this era of basketball. It just felt like the most cohesive around Joel, but that when Joel missed half a season, it was not as equipped as some of those other teams to survive it.
I think I was answering your question. James for sure carried us in a lot of those games last year, and as used to being the guy. And we just weren't generating clean looks for guys when Joel was out. Tyrese is getting better and better at that, but he's not like tops of the league in that yet. And look, to win games in this league, you have to have one elite guy. And Maxie's there, but he's not there in like his ability to create easy looks for others yet. I think he'll get there, and I think he's advanced a lot. So I interrupted you though.
You mentioned Maxie. What you guys obviously have your in-house data. What secret stuff does the data spit out about Maxie that maybe the people don't know yet, or it hasn't translated to the sort of how he's being discussed? Is there anything that you guys are noticing that feels new and feels something that you didn't expect?
Well, it wouldn't be secret then, would it, Mike?
Well, I'm not saying to release the algorithm.
He tried to trick you there.
Whisper it to me, Daryl.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah. I mean, obviously, we track defense very closely, and he has made progress there. We track, you know, how much you cut off the first move, how much you, take people out of their, comfortable moves on an offense, things like that. And so we can see that his progression. It takes a while for the defensive stuff to move because it's less accurate. But you can see his progression there. And that's huge. Like, unless you're a two-way player, you're not going to be a top 15 player in the league. I mean, that's not true. There's been some so elite one-way players that on offense that you can do it. Sometimes on D, but rarer. But you almost have to be at least, 40th, 30th percentile on D to be one of the top players.
It feels like Miami has gone through stretches of time when they haven't had good offense, and they're a team that turns it on in the playoffs. They'll be without Terry Rozier. A lot of what it seems like they will do will be to try to get a switch onto Maxie. It seems like at least switching Jimmy onto Maxie is something that they want to do. Is that something that you guys go like bring it on a little bit of, like, if you want to diagram your offense to be so targeted at one player
Bam could end up on Maxie too. That's happened when they switch that pick and roll. Look, I don't want to like talk too much because we're about to play. I have talked to Nick a lot, so I have a really good sense of like how he's thinking about things. But look, I don't really think Maxie's, can be stopped one on one. He's gotten to that.
Oh, I was saying defensively. I was saying defensively.
If they
go like, let's get Jimmy,
then they'll hunt him.
Switched onto Maxie, and let's get on.
Yeah. Well, we've got less huntable guys than last year, but we still have some. I think they'll try to get Joel in foul trouble. They'll try to go at Maxie. Yeah. I mean, and we're going to be doing stuff to them too. So,
I guess what is the difference between like, this is a one game playoff. This is a game seven.
It's a game seven. Like a game six. Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
We're up 3-2 on the
great
Celtics.
And that's great. Yeah. I was going to say, awesome. It's perfect. Just where we want them.
But like
how
much, I guess, how much do you throw everything at the wall? How much do you go for broke in this kind of like, if there's stuff that
I think you throw everything at the wall. Yeah. I mean, I think the winning this game is the much better path. Look, I mean, it is true that we likely have to play Boston to win the title. Not to go back to our earlier conversation. So the thesis of that would be like, it doesn't matter when you play them. But one of our better, options for beating Boston is we get some variance on the injury side, you know, that it goes our way for once, right? And so that's generally more likely to happen later in the playoffs. So I'd much rather play them later. I do think we can beat them, but we'd rather play them later. Yeah.
We take a break from this great conversation with Daryl Morey. We think it's great to talk to you about Body Bio. Body Bio is a supplement company in South Jersey, family owned and operated. We love Body Bio. And one of the things I love most about Body Bio, their products are great, of course, but the fact that they take such care and pride in the quality of the product. Some of the bigger supplement companies, they don't test every batch of everything that they do. And if they do, everything's so big, they just sort of like, ah, fuck it. Body Bio, if they get a batch that isn't up to standards or they are unable to get a specific ingredient that makes the product perfect, they take it off. They take it off the market. They wait until they can make it perfect and then they put it back. I think that's meaningful for stuff that you're going to put in your body. Stuff like Elite, which is amazing. Your perfect hydration solution. Put a little in your drink in the morning, a little in your drink in the evening. Solved cramping problem for me. The best part about this, it's pure electrolytes, no sugar, no artificial flavors, no artificial colors. It is perfect. Tributyrate as a sodium butyrate, as a gut supplement, help get rid of that bloat, help get rid of that irregularity, make you feel better, clean you out. Go to bodybio.com. Mike's cleaned out over there.
So clean.
So clean. Go to bodybio.com. Use code Mike's Tummy for 20% off any product. Once again, that is code Mike's Tummy for 20% off any product. Bodybio.com. We love Body Bio. Back to Daryl. I'm curious what your working relationship with Nick is about strategy. You know, you were talking about like asking him how, I guess, involved do you get in, obviously or not obviously, I would guess it's his final decision, but how involved are you in sort of game to game strategy?
Pretty limited. I honestly am more like a sounding board. Like just, hey, what are you thinking? And sometimes he's very creative. So he's like, sometimes he's worried, he's a little out there, like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And, you know, people who he trusts around him, like Elton, myself, and his key coaches and, you know, his top players saying like, hey, yeah, you know, good idea. You know, Kyle's gotten very involved in the planning. Obviously we're playing Miami. Joel, who's, you know, probably the highest basketball IQ on the team. He's, you know, he's always talking to Nick. So we're really more sounding boards for Nick and, you know, the defensive coach puts together game plan, you know, Nick then makes all the final calls. But yeah, if he, I'm here more like to encourage him if he's got great ideas that he's maybe worried or a little out there. So
you mentioned before you wished that you had done a better job of, you know, putting the team in position to succeed without Joel. So this may sound insane, but there are times when the Sixers over the last decade would trade for a player who we wanted. And then all of a sudden we would watch him every game and we'd be like, maybe not what we thought. Do you ever have to acquire a player, not draft wise, but trading somebody who you, I don't know, haven't watched tons and tons of film on, and then are surprised when they get there that they're a different player, positive or negative, than you thought?
It can happen at the trade deadline because often players get put in just to make salaries match. Right. And you haven't, like, we do a lot of video work myself and the staff before the trade deadline, for example, guessing at it's usually somewhere between 30 and 50 players that we think are the most likely we could acquire. And I would say almost always there's one that ends up coming that, and it's usually not the main player. It's like the second player. And you know, so I would say this year, Cameron Payne's like a good tick better than I thought, which is great. I think he's added a lot to the team. We didn't know Kyle was coming, but we had a good sense he was coming. And we thought that was the best thing for everyone, that for to give Pat a large role somewhere if it wasn't going to be here. But then Cam came in and like has been really, really positive. So like, yeah, so he's, and then some of it's just learning about players. Like we had done a lot of study on Buddy Hield. And I think he probably needs an edge a little more than I might've thought going in. Like he's not going to like do as much as you'd want, you know, when Joel is out, let's just be frank. Like, you know, we always thought his fit was there with Joel. I thought his fit without Joel was going to be a little bit better, but I think, look, just the nature of his game, he's always played off of others to get his clean looks. So
Campaign, by the way, is you think he's a tick better. He's like 10 times better than I hope. So when he's cooking, I love, I'm a big bucket getter guy, but he just looks like when he's cooking, he loves playing and he loves scoring. He's been a pleasure to watch actually.
And I think he took it personal.
Yeah.
That, you know, that Milwaukee moved on and thought Pat was better, obviously, but even by a second round pick, which is quite a bit. So I love, he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He obviously made the finals playing a big role with Phoenix, you know, so you know, he's, I've been really happy for him. That's been really cool.
Is there anything that you would like to take? You know, you've gotten, it's been a tough year for you, Dow. Been some criticism.
There's like no,
thrown
all,
your
it's
way.
All house money. It's all house money.
Sure. But I just want to know, I want to give you the opportunity. The Sixers are, you know, they win the last eight. Joel's back and pretty healthy. Deal with a tough injury luck this year. Melton and Covington looking maybe not so good for playing much in the playoffs, if at all. Is there anything, I'm giving you the opportunity before I yell at you later. Is there an opportunity that you want to take a victory lap for anything that you might've gotten criticism for over the course of the season?
Oh, victory lap. Oh,
victory lap before the playoffs, victory lap.
I don't think there's any.
There's nothing could go wrong.
Nothing could go wrong. I think it'll work out great.
I don't think there's any victory laps. I would say sometimes I'll wish that I could describe to the fans like why things are happening, like why, you know. And I think maybe on the last part of the one before that, you guys guessed, I think directionally correct, why Ricky maybe wasn't signing, and everyone, you know, it's like we sort of knew Ricky was someone we'd like to sign, and there are a whole set of reasons. We had to get him on, you know, a deal that's, you know, long-term here. We needed to deliver him a lot, as much value as we could this year. And so that required waiting, but there's really no good way to say that, cause it still might not happen, right? He still might not agree. And then you look even worse. You're like, oh, why'd they wait? Right. So I think, it's not necessarily a victory lap. It's more like, I wish there were times when I could help the fans sort of understand the overall dynamic. You know, I think you and I have spoken on past pods, like, you know, look, we bring in good players, so we're going to cut good players. Like, I think we're never going to get over that, but
yeah, sometimes you cut good players over bad
Philly,
players.
Philly fans should want every player we cut to go on and be amazing at other teams, because it means our scouting
works.
No, I know, but like, can you at least understand that conceptually that's how it should work? You should want your Philadelphia 76ers scouting staff to be so elite that when they have to cut someone, which happens all the time, by the way, that they go on and be amazing at other teams. That's showing that our scouting staff is doing a good job bringing players in.
It shows that our manager is doing a bad job of pick of afterwards. Yes, no. It would be that the scouting staff is good, but
yes.
Yeah, but actually, you're talking,
can you
about
bring the scouting staff on and you can leave right now when we talk to them.
let's go Sam Hinkie for a moment and say it's all black. Let's say we bring in four young players, they're all in 11, and you've doubled down on every hand. Uh-huh. Blackjack, all at 11, all good bets.
Yep.
But then the house comes in and said, oh, sorry, you broke the rules. You're only allowed to have two of those bets, but they're all good bets. You should want the two that are cut that are all equally good bets to go on and be amazing at other teams, because that shows that they brought in good players.
It's only because if the rest of the roster was perfect, then sure, I'll give it to you.
But there are other reasons.
When you're doubling down on like 25,
Yeah.
Which is not a hand you should double down on at the age that some guys have been signed to this team and expected to play a role in the playoffs over the last few years.
Here we go.
To continue with this analogy, though, the house comes in and says, hey, to play at our table, which has really good odds, you have to double down at 25. You're just going to have to play this one bad hand.
I don't buy because, that. I don't buy that the league office is telling you to double down on 25.
The CBA or other factors are saying you have to play one not good hand.
So someone in the league office who is Paul Millsap's uncle is telling you to double down on 25. I don't think that is happening. I don't think it's happening.
So Kevin O'Connor mentioned the other day on Twitter, and it's been like people have theorized this before or talked about this before, the idea of a top seed picking their opponent.
Yeah.
What do you think of that idea?
So we had it in the G League, and obviously, you know, if you need G League titles, I'm your guy. I'm on five now. So yeah. We're going to melt them down into one title this year. So, so I think, look, there's only one argument against it I think is good, and I'll let you guys decide. I think the preponderance of it should say you should do it. Because especially the way the NBA works, like the better teams beat the worst teams. We put a higher value in our league on the better teams beating the worst team than any sport. I would argue that's so the best argument against it is it creates more certainty in a sport that doesn't need more certainty. It would make the first round even more boring relative to history because the first seed is definitely going to pick a team that they will almost certainly, there's almost zero chance that the of the next seven teams that the best team in that conference that year will not beat whoever they select. This is the only time it gets interesting is like, oh my gosh, Philly. Oh my gosh, Miami. They're in the play-in because of injuries. Right. And so that would be the counter argument. And I'm on the fence overall, whether it's a good or bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think, do you put any stock into the idea that if Boston came out right now and said, hey, we won Orlando, that would adjust from a player, from like a Boston's players, because obviously some of those players would not fully agree with the decision to go get Orlando. And then Orlando plays with a chip on their shoulder, bulletin board material. Maybe you don't put too much stock into that, but it's compelling.
I think what would happen is Boston would get a hat and do it live on TV and swirl their hand around, and every tag in there is Orlando, and they pull it out and act like...
Yeah.
It's like, but you're right. I do think that's real. Look, Boston's so good. They're the best team I've seen since the Warriors title teams. I don't think it matters. They would beat Orlando comfortably without, you know, whether they picked them or not. So my opinion in that case. So.
Be good TV, though.
It would be good TV. Yeah.
Swirling hat.
I agree.
Actually, the TV should be like when they have the camera in with players at the NCAA tournament and they find out that they're in, the camera should be in with the players of all the teams when they get selected just to watch their faces. Would be
that'd
amazing.
Be great. I think that'd be good. I think
you have to do it like hidden camera because now they're all too polished.
Oh, right.
I don't know. I mean, they're still...
You need to have like pizza party, but there's, you know, like Manny cams at the pizza party. So you can just get the candid reaction,
You know, like bubble teams like St. John's or Providence or NC State or Oregon or something, like being like fired up or pissed that somebody else gets in, or sometimes when a team gets underseeded in the tournament where they're like a four, like this is bullshit. It could be good. It could, even if they are polished, I think the first natural reaction, I don't know if you remember this, Joel, when he got drafted, had quite a lag in his video. Do you remember this?
No.
My
highest pick ever is 14.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So
not used to that. And he was, when the camera cut to him, he looked very pissed off that the Sixers had taken him. And then later he admitted that it was a lag or it was all fine, and he was excited about it. But there could be some of that in that thing. Anyway.
I'm sorry. I did pick 12, but I immediately traded it.
Speaking of remembering some good times of picking in the teens.
Speaking of league decisions, when the league makes a decision in the middle of the year to all of a sudden start calling fouls completely differently and lie about it, is there Do you guys adjust strategy because of how the game is called, or no?
This is the portion where you try to get me in trouble, right?
No, I'm saying they lied about it and changed.
Sure, sure, sure.
I'm asking you.
Yeah, you have to adjust 100%. In fact, I was even at the, you know, Nick said not to blow too much smoke up his ass. I'm a huge fan. I was literally at the meeting when like the data was like overwhelming that things were, let's just say things were being called different.
Yeah.
Well, how, we don't know.
Right.
And you know, he just went, that was like, look, this is the reality. So we're going to have to be the ones who hit first. And, you know, he was like in the face of the players. And, you know, I really thought, you know, he did a nice job because it was during a tough stretch too, where, look, I mean, being physical was one of the things we just literally had to do to win. Like we couldn't get out talented and physical and everything and expect to win the game. And so that was Nick's message. Like, this is going to have to be a dogfight, you know, to win.
So he was saying on defense, play more physical.
Play way more physical. Yeah. Yeah. And look, I the playoffs, you already know that. So it's not anything new, but I think, yeah, we were like the game before, like, yeah, it was one of those, I don't remember the team, but it was a tougher team and we definitely got out physical. Then so he was like, and we played great the next game. So
are you concerned about that on a Joel level? Since he's been back, he has been getting the calls that it seems like some other guys don't get. He obviously gets mauled on a ton of plays. He's very good at drawing those fouls in a way that some other guys are not, especially at that size. Are you concerned that there's going to be a difference in the playoff whistle? And is that something that you or Nick have spoke to him about? Is he considering that?
Yeah, we worry about it, but there's really not much to do. You don't want him to change his game. Like, you know, the fact the worst thing would be like, you know, just shoot, you know, do less aggressive things. Like, I don't know. Nick might have said something, but I personally have not. I think Joel's like, it's almost like I don't want to touch him. Like, he's outplaying his MVP here. He's playing awesome. I do worry about the physical play, him getting hurt. But again, there's like, what am I supposed to do? It's a physical game.
We take a break from this fabulous conversation with Daryl.
Oh, it's so good.
It's
probably
so good.
Right about now, we got into a large argument about the same three or four things we've always argued about. This is right fresh off the Isaiah Joe conversation. It has to be.
Again.
Isaiah Joe again.
Again. So before I talk to you about Mortgage CS, once again, the year t-shirt available till 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning from Shy Vintage Sports. This is what it looks like. Looks amazing. Get it before it's gone, before it sounds stupid in one day. It's a memento of our stupidity. But Mortgage CS. So Mortgage CS is a mortgage broker. They are a trusted sponsor of the Ricky. I trust them. I wouldn't tell you that to go there unless I trusted them. Independent is certainly important. Independent as a mortgage broker is important because it is their job to go to these banks, the lenders, and work with them to get you the loan that is best for you. A lot of the bigger mortgage brokers, the ones that aren't independent, have relationships with these banks that you don't know about that could lead them to lead you toward a bank, toward a loan that may benefit them but doesn't benefit you. Also, what's great about Mortgage CS, aside from them always being available, them being patient and communicative, them teaching you about the mortgage process, is that it is a crazy competitive market and it's not changing anytime soon. They're going to help you win your bid. You're going to bid for a house. There's going to be 12 other people bidding. They're going to give you tips on bidding competitively. They're going to call the listing agent when your bid is in. Part of getting the house is them being sure that your mortgage is going to actually come through and you're going to get the money. They have a great reputation, which helps, and they're always available. Like right now, call or text Ben, the CEO, right to the top. The CEO, 267-391-7425. That's 267-391-7425. At any time, you can get to them at any time. They're going to get you your loan. They're going to teach you about mortgages, and you can text them at midnight. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky to schedule your phone consultation. Once again, mortgagecs.com/Ricky. Call or text Ben at 267-391-7425. Mention the pod. They take care of you. They're taking care of one of my coworkers up in New York, actually. And if you don't believe me, that's fine. I'm not trustworthy. Go to just Google Mortgage CS and read the reviews online. They're all perfect. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky for more information. Now back to the same argument with Daryl.
What are you like watching a playoff game?
Oh, I'm just horrible. Yeah, it's like Nick leaves the game and he's not like, I would be drenched in sweat. There'd be like just the whole pit. The whole thing would be all sweaty, and Nick leaves the court and he looks like great. I don't know how he does it. I would be, yeah, I'm just like, yeah.
He just wants to go home and play guitar with his band friends or whatever. He's totally
legit
right.
Good, by the way.
Yeah,
legit good.
I know.
He'll play the piano upstairs in our practice facility now. Like, if you hear the piano, it's Nick. He's an awesome, awesome character. So, yeah, I'm all logic goes out. All this like logic stuff that people see all just disappears during the game. And I just get mostly angry. And Sam Hinkie makes fun of me, by the way, for that.
Well, you know what? Bizarre. Like,
barely a human being.
No, Sam. No, I love
no,
Sam.
No, we love Sam. But
I love Sam. Love Sam. It's just the... Whatever. We'll leave it alone. Other podcast. And just tell him to come on. The four of us, we don't even have to talk about basketball.
No. I talked to him today.
Yeah.
And I told him you guys rang the bell, and he was all happy about that. And I was like, you can ring the bell. He's like, oh, no. And I was like, yeah, you should re-engage. But look, I think, to his credit, you know, he rode off in the sunset. And I asked him, I asked him, does Detroit call? And, you know, because they, you know, like, do teams like reach out to like look for options? I'm not even saying they're changing. And and he's like, no, no one even, he's like, I'm out in the wilderness. So,
so like it or not, people will give us credit, meaning me and Mike, for pressuring you into things like matching the contract for Paul Reed.
Yeah, signing, which you said that you did not think about us at that time.
Signing
like
Ricky.
New York to Philly or something, right?
Yeah, signing Ricky Council. Like, because we are annoying about it, we get the credit. Would you like to address the rumors that we have had an effect on who you sign?
I think, you know, I'm a pretty logical guy. We're doing what's the right, even when, you know, the house comes in and says we have to play the hand that's at 25.
A lot of blaming the house in this one, man.
I'm just saying there are guaranteed contracts and non-guaranteed contracts, so they're pretty different. So
yep.
Anyway, long story short, part of being a passionate fan I'll try not to pick on places I've been, but I actually talked to Tad Brown today, our CEO, and I was like, oh, you know, do you need me on RTRS to talk about the play-in game tomorrow and ticket sales? And he's like, no, sold out immediately. You don't need to do any of that. And I was like, oh man, because I remember places we've been before and we had trouble selling. He's like, yeah. Not here. I was like, okay, sweet. But anyway, yeah, that's awesome. So people are passionate. They're passionate about the moves too. Like, so it's fine. You know,
there has been a big, a lot of support for Ricky Council. I think part of it was just seeing a guy that, you know, with that body, be that athletic and compete as hard as he does. He's also had a couple, like he hit a couple of free throws to win a game a few months ago. He's had his moments more than most undrafted rookies would have been. What are you seeing out of Ricky that you think he could help a little bit considering injuries in this playoff run? And then what you see for him maybe in the next 5 years?
In this playoff run, I think most of it's mostly negative scenarios. But in the non-negative scenarios, it's like, you know, Daniel House came in and gave us a really good game. I think it was game maybe six or five, I think, last year in Boston. You know, Maxey, even in his first year, gave us a big lift. I don't want to put that expectations on him. The thing that we're excited about Ricky is everyone sees the defensive. He's got NBA body, defensive potential, transition. But offensively, he's really got a knack because of the athleticism of getting to the rim and to the line. Even, and his finishing is adventurous, but surprisingly effective.
I said the same problem, thing. I've been saying knack about Ricky Council's foul drawing ability for, I'm never saying knack more than I'm saying it about Ricky getting to the line. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, some of it's like, I learned this from the refs. We'll have ref sessions of where former pro refs, NBA refs come in and try and give you the tricks of the trade. And they proxy athleticism almost over anything. Like, even like the height of if you jump higher than the other guy, your odds of getting the call like go up by 10 to 20%, things like that. And so with Ricky, though, I think the most exciting thing for me is a big question mark was the shot. His fundamentals are probably not ideal, but he has so much touch within these less than ideal fundamentals. It actually points to a lot of upside, I think, that he's got this touch on, you know, probably not how you'd go out in the playground and teach a guy to shoot. So I see a lot of upside there on his shot.
There is a chaos to him playing that is fun, that it actually sort of reminds me of when, not that B-ball Paul is like polished, but the previous version when we first saw him where he was just like chaos. There's something about Ricky Council, and it's wild that he gets those calls even. And I think probably it's because of the chaos. He just, there's so much activity when he's in the game. It's fun to watch.
I think it's a fair way to say it. Yeah.
How often do you think about, like, aside from everything all the time, which I'm sure your brain doesn't stop, but like, how often are you at this point thinking about off season and what the off season might look like?
Yeah, I have to think about that a lot because, like, a lot of the things get plotted even, like, earlier. So we're already deep into that. We've got a lot of variance, you know. So if you want to have even more panic, there's a lot of, like, look, there's a lot of options. A lot of them are really good, but there's a spectrum, and some of those are better and some of them aren't as good. So, look, we're set up very well for, you know, big things to happen, but you need to, you know, you need to execute on those. And then if you have to go to plan B, you have to make those as optimal as possible to both make you good in the short run and also keep your flexibility, you know, using your picks and other things to continue to improve the team in the short to medium term. But the bottom line, we're going to be in a good spot because of Maxie and Joel. It's just you really feel a responsibility to make 3 through 10 extremely good as well.
So, is it something that you look forward to watching the playoffs, watching non-Sixers playoff games, and rooting for particular teams to fail?
No, I thought you were going to say the positive. I guess maybe fail. I'm really rooting for the Kings. They didn't start yet, right? I think they start soon because Monty McNair.
Sure. I didn't mean that. I mean because of the various unnamed free agent targets that you might want to shake loose.
Yes, we do think about that. I won't say which teams, but of course. Yeah, you really want, like, it would really help if certain teams lost. Yeah.
Does like the early front office get together and go like, okay, we're going to root for this city.
A rooting guide.
No, I just think it's pretty obvious. Like, cause like, it's not just as we've talked about, I think on this pod, what free agents are out there. It's really like, which guys are going to say, I want to leave their team, as we've seen firsthand twice. Like, it does put pressure on the team. It does increase the odds of a trade. You know, if those things often happen around playoff failures and things like that. So, yeah, I think there are certain teams you definitely, as a Sixers fan, would prefer to lose early.
And you'll text all those Sixers fans individually to let them know what you're rooting
for.
Yeah,
one of I'll use one of those weirdo celebrities that have like the, use my cell phone. Here it is.
Yeah.
send me a question. It'll definitely be me responding as The Rock, you know.
The rights to Ricky Sanchez is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Oh, yeah. I'm going to look at some props here for the Miami game. So the game opened up at DraftKings Sportsbook, Sixers-Miami, Sixers minus four. Do you know what it is right now?
4.5.
Sixers minus 5.5.
Ooh.
The public seems to like the Sixers. Uh-oh.
That could be a Terry Rozier thing.
Terry Rozier's not worth a point, I don't think.
Makes me scared.
Yeah, it makes me scared. They actually have, we're going to have our own same game parlay up tomorrow. They have a him over me same game parlay, which is Jimmy Butler, 20 plus points, Tobias Harris under 14.5, and Jimmy Butler over 5.5 rebounds. Wow. So the him over me same game parlay. Playoffs are here. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the app. Use code RTRS. That is RTRS if you're a new customer. Bet $5, get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code RTRS, the him over me parlay. That is cursed, guys. DraftKings, that is cursed. Once again, code RTRS, only at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Got to be 21. See show notes for details.
You mentioned the particular player forcing his way out. The return in the James Harden trade, which feels like seven seasons ago, but what was still the same season.
PJ Tucker played for us this year.
Yes, he did.
God, that is crazy to think about.
Yeah, it is for us too.
Wow.
So, yeah.
As far as the three guys from the team who is still here, obviously Marcus Morris made a difference when he was here and then got moved in within the context of a buddy trade. Did you get of those guys? What were your expectations of them when the trade happened, and how have they sort of
surpassed? Oh, from the Harden trade you're talking about.
Yeah, Batum coming in and KJ.
Like, he was like someone I really liked as sort of a Shane Battier type fit guy. Mm-hmm. But he's, I don't want to say anything bad about Shane, but he's probably better. And then his fit with Joel was, again, better than I expected. Obviously, Robert got hurt, so that I thought he was going to shore up small ball lineups because that's how we used him in Houston, but he really never had a chance and got hurt and all that. So I think, you know, Batum was the primary, guy that I really thought would be able to step in. KJ gave us a lot of key minutes. Especially when we got really shorthanded and Coach Nurse really got to trust him, especially helping in transition, was able to switch. So he contributed as well, but he just didn't get as many chance at minutes this year. So
the Batum and Lowry additions to this team over the course of the season, not obviously didn't even have an off season and a training camp and everything to get going and feel like it's been a full, cohesive unit, but you can so feel the basketball IQ between the two of those guys, in addition to being just like very capable two-way players, in addition to doing sort of everything on a basketball court. I'm going to tell you how it makes me feel, and then you tell me how it makes you feel. But like the
warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, the comfort I feel with those guys on the floor in a decision-making capacity is so unlike previous seasons when there were guys in the rotation that you were just begging to make the right play or begging to see something happen before it was going to. Jimmy Butler is a guy that we're playing against who it just seemed like always beat them to the ball, beat them to the spot, beat them to like think the game quicker. How is it making you feel?
I need to get you with Nick. I need to get you with Nick because you guys would just completely vibe on this stuff. So obviously a lot of Nick stuff requires higher basketball IQ guys. And look, it's always a trade-off, right? I mean, you guys can play Mike's basketball video, but I'm guessing when you play, you have high IQ on the floor.
I can't say that to myself.
I'm guessing you probably do, but you would also know that if there were five of you, we would win all of zero games in 82 in the NBA. So it's more than just basketball. You have to have it in an athletic package and shooting and all that kind of stuff. So I'm leading up to an answer, which is a story, which is, so Nick Batum is really like the guy who always is in the right place on defense, always executing what Nick wants. And I remember during this year when we were in it was during our bad stretch when Joel was out, and we're just trying to scrape out wins. And it was later in the game, and Batum made, like, I don't even know the details of it, like, missed an assignment, or maybe he didn't hear it right, or maybe it was communicated. Well, who knows? But he didn't do exactly what Nick wanted, and it was in a, and like, we ended up losing the game. And I think it almost broke Nick. He was like, oh, my guy who always does it. Right. I think we'd won, lost three in a row. We lost, we had a couple stretches. We lost a bunch in a row. And so he really values that. I really value it. I, you know, you have to have it as just one piece of the equation, though, is my only caution. Right. I mean, like, Joel and seven Nick Batums probably also wouldn't win. Yeah. So it would be pretty fun, though. It might be fun. A lot of quick shots from all over the place.
Do you have access to seven Nick Batums?
There's probably some. You know, people are really weirded out by clones, you know? You know? And, like, to me, we already have clones. They're called identical twins. They're born at the same time. We already know what clones. They'll be different people. We should not be weirded out by clones. They already exist. So what I'm saying is we could make a bunch of Nick Batums and we should all be fine with it. So
would the office allow that? How would the salary cap work with clones?
But it's factual. We already are living with clones and people are acting like it's a weird thing. It's not. There's even more clones because of IVF. So
we reached the galaxy brain sequence.
I'm just trying to turn all the fans off at the end here. If they're still listening, I'm trying to turn them off right here. So
an off-season question. And I truly ask this. I appreciate you coming on and you let us peppering you with shit. I do. You are, I've never seen a GM or president, whatever, take questions from idiots like us the way that you do.
Well, so, you're not idiots. That's part of it. But well,
that's our whole bit. We're so dumb. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was, during the Harden scenario, there was the, like, he said that you lied. And then Pat Beverly on a podcast, and I assume that you have a pretty good relationship with Pat, actually, but, like, suggested on a podcast that you were not truthful with him at some point. So you can obviously, you and the people close to you know the truth of all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. But do you ever get concerned that, like, it's such a, especially in a world where, like, everybody can offer the same salary, like, you know, for the top level players, mm-hmm. are you concerned? Do you ever get concerned that when things like that get said, that they can have a ripple effect that is unwanted?
Yeah, I would say, look, it's human nature. So I do get bothered by it. I don't think it's fair. You know, shocker, my side of it would be that, you know, Pat's stuff was just, I mean, he didn't want to be traded. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And I think after he heard everything, he was fine with it. But so I think, yeah, to your point, I think with Pat, I'm in a good place. I'm supposed to be on his pod in the off season. We already chatted about it, so we can hug it out there again. But look, I mean, look, this part of this role, unfortunately, is there's always, like, hard feelings. Like, it's someone has to make the hard calls, you know, and usually it falls on one person. And it's much better that it's one person than, you know, multiple people. You definitely don't want them disliking the coach or things like that. So it's just, to me, it's like part of the role. I really do hope it doesn't turn into anything bigger. My sense is it doesn't. So look, the key people, the key movers and shakers in the league are really the agents. And look, the agents know that there's never really been ever any issue with that, and done plethoras of deals over more than 20 years. So I don't really worry about it, but, you know, the social media, just like the AI statue thing, mm-hmm. the most ridiculous thing ever. Literally, we have eight statues, all the same scale size. And it's all the, like, if you told every person who is being snarky, but it's fun to be snarky on social media, I'm on it.
Yes.
That this is not a statue in front of the arena. It's a statue, like, in, like, a little thing for the players, everyone would get it. if we have an AI statue at the future Sixers arena, it will be like, you know, like Kobe or Shaq or Michael Jordan in front of the Bulls stadium. It'll be like that. So,
well, Kobe's statue had a few misspellings at first, so maybe don't, maybe not exactly like that.
Okay. All right. Well, or not Ronaldo. Like, that's the thing. Like, has there been actually a statue unveiling in the last 2 years that the initial reaction wasn't immediately extremely negative?
Maybe we should stop unveiling. Maybe it's the sheet covering coming off that is.
Oh, so you just move.
Just like have it up one day.
It just shows up like, oh, there. Like those installations in the desert, like those big mirrored installations that just show up in the desert. Got it. Okay. Yeah. I'll tell. I'll work on it.
So we are, the playoffs have, the play-in has begun. I want to know what you are concerned about non-injury division heading into the playoffs, as far as what the way that you like to see them play, the Sixers play, and what you're worried they will fall short of doing or accomplishing or executing.
Yeah, non-injury. What are the what are our key areas to attack us? Basically, is what you're essentially asking. Look, I don't think we get enough easy baskets. Like that's been sort of season long. Most of that's on me. We don't really have great personnel for that. In fact, even Kyle, who's 30, whatever he is, eight, he'll often be like pushing the ball up and then there's like no one with him. And I do think we need, we get easy baskets through free throws and things like that. So I'd probably say, you know, we make our degree of difficulty on offense, a little bit harder than I'd like. Joel helps a lot there. Maxi does. Then on defense, I'd probably say we're very good at turning you over. We're very good at taking away primary options. The teams that can string together, usually they're higher IQ teams that can string together multiple good passes, tend to hurt us into really wide open, shots. So. Mm. So I'd probably say that. And then, my last one would be, we actually defense rebound well with focus, but not when we're not focused. So it's like we got to keep our focus on that end. The last thing I'd say is, you know, against the Heat, we took the year we lost in the series 2 years ago now. We took quite a few, like, you know, 10 to 20 foot shots and of the 30, whatever we missed, we rebounded zero of them. So we're just going to have to get some extra possessions on those misses in that range. So
thing Nico Batum does a good job of doing.
Love those. You know, Buddy Hield crashes too.
Buddy Hield crashed the glass. I've noticed that as well.
I can't. He sort of listens. I mean, he really wants to succeed, which is awesome. He's really, really focused. So.
Do you think if we all talk in French accents in Philadelphia, Nick Batum will play another year and stay?
I think our biggest, you know, he's obviously a wonderful guy and really close to his family. So probably his family is the thing that will hurt us the most. I don't know if cheese or accents will help. Yeah, unfortunately. So
I don't know if you heard, but Mike and his writing partner, Patrick, just sold a movie to Universal and that they're in talks with Emma Stone to star in it. It is being reported that the plot of the movie is tightly guarded. I'm wondering, do you have any guesses as to what the plot might be? It has not been revealed yet.
So I will say the only thing I know that Mike has written besides Young Rock and How I Met Your Mother, right? You worked on, at some point. Those are the only two off the top of my head that I know you've written is the Ben Simmons thing that didn't get made.
Sure. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
It feels like you have enough wall space for my IMDb to be up there, Daryl.
Yeah. So. I could have pulled it up. I'm just saying of the ones off the top of my head, I brought it up is I haven't read any of his film scripts. But I've only heard of the Ben Simmons one. So did he maybe dust off the Ben Simmons script?
Yeah.
Will Emma Stone be in the sprinter van waiting for Ben after the game? Or
is Emma Stone playing Ben Simmons? Something interesting to ponder, a role of a lifetime.
Well, if you did it, I know it would be interesting, and and it will be untouched by AI or portal renters.
Sure, honestly, if I tried to do that, I think AI might be a good safeguard against me doing that.
Well, the danger.
Well, aren't you going to tell us what it's about, Mike?
No, I'm not allowed to.
It's tightly
guarded. Really?
Yeah,
I'm not allowed to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, the bad news is if the Sixers, fail in the playoffs and we are broken, and this podcast pivots into an Emma Stone podcast, Mike's not going to be able to be neutral and objective.
That's
on
fine.
The podcast.
That's been the case for a long time.
Are you going to get too big time for Philly, Mike? Are you just going to?
He's been in Los Angeles for 15 years.
No, I know, but I mean, like, he still talks to fans. He still watches games. I'm
sure,
just
he still watches games. With the understatement of the century, you still watch games.
So you're going to hit that spot of fame where you just you give up on Philly. Is that going to happen? Yeah.
I don't think that that's a concern. I don't think that I can quit the Sixers for as much as I should probably do. Don't think I'm going to get that famous unless the Sixers continue asking us to ring the bell.
Yeah.
What if we rang the bell every game? That would be like, we're like, it's us and Franklin just doing our bell ring every time. No,
I got your IMDb pitch. You got the Grinder.
Yep.
The Mighty Ducks.
This is not entertaining.
You asked. You said I need to.
I said it should be on the wall. I didn't say you'll read it aloud.
Oh, okay. Sorry. The Mighty Ducks, is that like number four or something?
Oh boy.
We never talked about that one.
Yeah. Oh, the TV show. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay.
So very quickly removed from Disney Plus. Some of the quickest removal of content.
Really? They're gone. Racist from the 40s?
No.
Yeah, it was terribly racist.
They took it down to a racist version of Mighty Ducks. Or something like that. I don't know.
It's like yours and Song of the South.
No. There's nothing like that in there. They took it down for a tax break or something. I don't know. You think I understand business? You think I'm coming on this podcast to understand business?
I think it's pretty clear you don't understand business.
Thank you. The nicest thing you could say.
You wouldn't let me hold the guaranteed 25. I'm being forced by the house to hold.
True. How much do you care about so when we're talking about the Miami, Philadelphia game, I said that like on NBA 2K, broadcast or something. When we're talking about the Heat and Sixers game, there is a narrative arc with Joel and Jimmy, given that Jimmy was here and those two are close and Jimmy's the motherfucker and Joel hasn't succeeded. And like the idea of Joel beating him is interesting narrative arc. How much of that stuff do you care about?
I do actually care about Jimmy's case because like he's one of the few guys who elevates in the playoffs. Like you look pretty much, Josh or David, will ask questions that are good questions. Like, hey, who are the guys around the league who elevate in the playoffs? And the answer is really nobody. It's just the stars don't get worse. Everyone else gets worse. And the stars sort of stay the same. Jimmy
more minutes.
Yeah, they play more. So more minutes happens always. But even like when you start to track efficiency, Jimmy goes up across the board, defense, everything. It's really remarkable. I wasn't here, but it clearly seemed somewhat personal. Just even my first year here, when it was still a little bit more, the feelings were there. And I've watched Jimmy, he's from Houston. I've watched him play forever. He was at PIT. PIT's happening this week in Portsmouth, the seniors in college.
Love
and so I've watched him forever. He just doesn't like threes or shoot them. So, but then I'm like, my eyes are bleeding. I'm literally watching it was like game 20 of the year after COVID. And Jimmy's like just shooting only threes against us. I'm like, okay, this is clearly personal. Like there's really nothing. There's really not much you can say about it, except he really wants to beat us. And look, he's can't take anything away from the guy. He's done it. So I do think beating him would mean a lot. Yeah.
I would like that. Let me ask you a philosophical question, basketball philosophy. Do you believe that, how can I phrase it? End of games moments into the fourth quarter crunch time, when you're trying to put the best, you want the coach to put the best five in the five. Obviously you're not setting the rotations or setting the lineups. Do you have a philosophy as to what guys have earned the right to stick in closing lineups, regardless of how they are playing in that game or in that moment, versus going with the hot hand or the best fit or whatever it is?
Yeah, let's just first be very clear. I'd be a bad coach, so I'll just give. But I'll tell you, if I was a coach, I mean, it's sort of a theoretical question. Mm-hmm. I'm way more of a planning guy than like I would go in with like, here's how I'm going to play the game, and not vary as much. You know, like someone like say a very good coach, Mike Budenholzer, got criticized for. I would be closer to his kind of a style, where I'm like, this guy I know is a good player. I know maybe he's played poorly, missed shots, you know, seems less engaged, but I would probably stick to the plan and then take a step back and adjust. But I like, so fans would hate me, so don't have me be the coach. So I don't know if I answered your question, that would be my answer. Yeah. Did I not answer it? I feel like I didn't.
No, you did. It was a little bit, I was sneakily doing it, but it just, I feel pretty strongly, and if I might say correctly, that Maxey and Embiid should be the only ones guaranteed to be finishing games, and everybody else should be whoever is playing well in that moment or against that particular matchup.
Yeah, so I probably disagree with you more than I agree with you. Yeah, where I would go in saying, given the matchups the team were playing, I agree that you can, Maxey and Joel are definitely the two that have to be in there, and the rest could vary, but I'd probably more want to plan that ahead and feel like this is what I think would work, and I'm going to trust that I knew it would work prior to the game, not in the heat of the moment. So, but most fans hate that. So, but that's how I look at it.
So I can see you not wanting to answer this, even though it's not, but why paint a picture? Brett Brown used to say that before games, he would ask the team how they were going to lose this game. Like what could go wrong that you could lose it? Not that they were really going to lose. No, not that they were going to lose, but sort of.
No, I just know them. Psychology. You don't even want to say the word.
But the opposite way, I guess, is like this playoff run, make an argument for why this one will be different in a positive way for the Sixers than previous playoff runs.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. We, you know, again, my time here, and I think even when you go back, you can debate it, but even when you adjust for who we played in the schedule, I mean, we were hitting levels that were higher than we've played over a pretty long sample size of, and you know, pretty much all the credit goes to Joel and Maxey playing at really high levels, I would say, with Batum's of the world and others like fitting in, Oubre's, you know, Tobias has had on a really good run here towards the end of the season as well. So, yeah, I would say I'm an evidence guy. So, like, just we were beating teams by a lot, and we were beating good teams, and we were comfortably on our way. So I would say that is what's different. Probably the biggest negative is just Boston's also playing at a really, really high level. But I feel like we're right there. Yep.
Well, I really hope it happens, Daryl.
So do I.
I really would like it to.
I hope your movie happens, Mike.
This is not what we're talking about. We're not.
No, I only say that because Hollywood, like, it seems like everything's in a state of not happening and happening at the same time. So
that's an off-season question. We're not dealing with the off-season until it's the off-season. Right now we're in the playoffs. And I really want it to be the year.
I'm with you.
Would like that. It's been long enough. Do you feel like if they got to the conference finals, I would be happy?
No, you said we're fine if we lose the play-in, win the second, and beat the Celtics in the first round, then we're fine, right? We've checked your box.
Yes. Sure, I guess in that that would be fine.
You got his ass.
That would be fine. But generally speaking, I would like, do you feel this? We've talked about this before, that winning any of these matchups, any one of them, would be the best playoff win of the Joel era.
to give credit to whatever our whatever we call our raconteur or whatever we had the last
flirting,
time.
I think is what it's called.
Flirting. I hope not. I would say, this whoever we beat this year is better than Washington. Who did we beat? Toronto, Washington, and
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Thank you. Yeah. You were correct, sir.
Okay.
Well, man,
I hope it happens. I hope all that happens. I hope many monkeys get off our back.
I just hate we have to do this. Like, we basically have to win 9 in a row to finish the year. That's how I've tried to compartmentalize it in my head. So versus 8. So. 8.
Yeah. 8's down. It's just one more game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if we win 20, I think it's 25 in a row, we'll have won the title. So just let's do that. How about that?
Great.
Sounds fine. Honestly.
That's my plan. That's the plan. Yeah.
Well, good luck. I don't know. The team, we agree that the team when Joel has played has been the best team that we've watched of the Joel era, for sure. And have argued many times that while they weren't as good without Embiid as you like, it actually, I guess it does matter in that you would be out of the play-in if that was the case, but like ultimately Joel has to be playing anyway. So good luck, because everyone's going to be so mad at you if they don't win.
That's part of the job. Part of the job.
You shouldn't have taken such a big victory lap on this podcast.
Yeah.
I think that was
a mistake. Yeah, that's what I'm famous for is victory lap.
It was a trick. Yeah.
I do. I want it for Joel. I want it for you. I want it for us. Let it be the year.
Don't forget Elton Brand, man.
Elton. Of course.
Yeah.
Elton is encompassed in the front office and stuff. I
need to send you, by the way, when
the scouts.
They were all doing their job perfectly. I need to send you the clip of when Elton appeared live with us on stage in front of 1,000 people.
I do want to see that.
A week after he got named general manager.
He must have been so uncomfortable. He hates that stuff so much.
He was. He trusted me.
Sold it well.
Yeah, he did a great job. So
I hope we get PJ Tucker a ring this season. That would be really nice.
Yes.
I would want to get him a ring. I love PJ.
So. Yeah, you and me. All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Good
luck. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So there he is, Daryl Morey. Tried to sneak in a Tobias question there. He didn't buy it, really.
Tried. Tried.
So would you say that everyone, even people on max contracts that are expiring, need to be in the closing lineup? So
rhymes with go bias.
Yeah. So thank you, Daryl. We appreciate him coming on.
I hope Tobias has a great playoff run.
Yes,
I hope that he has. I hope he earns every closing stretch of the playoffs. I hope very much that happens. But if he doesn't, I don't want him on the court.
They win the title, they can give him another max for all I fucking
everything.
Care.
Spend it all.
Who cares?
Double down on 25. The whole thing.
We will.
Let's go.
Talk to you Wednesday night after the Heat game. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah.
Then I won't fuck with you. No. My face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.